I'm going to ask, yeah, Mark and Elise to come on up for those who didn't get a chance. By the way, Elise, that is a beautiful dress.
Thank you.
Mark has a very handsome shirt as well. I've been making over your wife's dress all morning, and so I gotta give a little
it's
bit.
Just
of,
a shirt.
Hey, but it's a nice shirt. Okay, I'm a little bit envious, but really glad to have you guys here, and I don't want to take any more of your time.
Awesome, thank you.
Great to have you guys here this morning. Thank you.
We're happy to be here. Yeah, actually, these are Karen tribal attire. So this was made by some of the Karen people. They sell them at a Siloam Bible College, and my outfit was made by one of my friends. She hand wove it for me and stitched it. So a labor of love for sure.
So yeah, thank you so much for having us here. Thank you, Pastor John. We are here with our three kids, Sydney, Gavin, and Colin. And we're just so glad to be here. We've been in Thailand now for 3.5 years now, and this is our first time back for about 6 months.
Yeah, so we were here, I think, about 4 years ago. We were trying to calculate that out. Some familiar faces, a lot of new ones. But we were called to the mission field, Mark and I, both separately in 2005. Before we even met. And that journey was a lot of patience and waiting on the Lord. And in 2016, God called us to specifically focus our time in moving towards Thailand, which is when we met you in the path of that, I think in 2019. And we actually moved to Chiang Mai in February of 2020. So 1 month before everything happened, right? The country went in lockdown about 4 weeks after we arrived. And that not exactly how we would plan a transition cross-culturally, but we just trusted in God's timing. It had a lot of bumps, but God carried us through all of that, and we were actually quite thankful to be there, even though it was a little chaotic. Today, we're going to focus on sharing some of the lessons that we have learned, just really within ourselves and also in general with our relationship with God, and hoping that it will encourage you through the works that we're doing over there.
My turn?
No, your turn.
Okay,
yeah, good.
Thank you. Yeah, and in Thailand, we work with one particular group of people called the Hill Tribe people. There's seven indigenous tribes of people who are non-ethnically Thai that live in Thailand and all of Southeast Asia. And they are the people group, collectively they're known as the Hill Tribe people. And they are the group of people that most likely are the ones that fall into poverty, to fall into trafficking, to be susceptible to drug use, and a lot of other things. And so they're the group of people that we are working with mostly in Thailand.
So the two ministries that we are associated with, the first one is House of Love. Do we have slides?
Yeah, there we go.
House of Love. Is the youth home. It has actually been, we just celebrated 25 years, a couple years ago, so I think we're in year 27 now. And the focus of that youth home is for orphaned, at-risk, and abused Hill Tribe kids from these low-income families that we've discussed. And then the second program that we work with is the House of Blessing Preschool. This one is celebrating 20 years this year, I believe. And we have currently have about 48 little ones, 3, 4, 5-year-olds, that focus on serving these really, really low-income families in the city of Chiang Mai. It's an opportunity for them to come, receive early education, learn Thai, because they're not ethnically Thai, and prepare them to get into the Thai school system.
Yep. And so today we're going to frame our sharing around Isaiah 6. And this chapter really stands out to people serving cross-culturally because of how Isaiah responds. But when you look at the chapter as a whole, it's so much deeper than that one verse. And we could seriously do a whole sermon series on the different themes in this one chapter alone.
Yeah, so Isaiah 6 really applies to all of us, not just us overseas somewhere, but all of us, right? Because we all have a mission field around us. So I'd really encourage you to put yourself into Isaiah's shoes. What would it be like for you to really be in the absolute presence of God? And how would you respond? As we go through this passage, please think about that. So if you have your Bibles, would you please turn to Isaiah 6? And if not, we've got the scripture up there. Hear now from the Word of God. We're going to break it up a little bit and have some discussion in between. So starting with verse 1. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord, high and exalted, seated on a throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphim, each with six wings. With two wings they covered their faces, with two they covered their feet, and with two they were flying. And they were calling to one another, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory." At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke.
So Isaiah here doesn't just read about God or have a conversation with a bush. He's downright in the presence of the Almighty God. This is the creator of the universe. Sometimes I think we forget this in our prayer lives. It's great to picture God as a close and intimate friend or a counselor, and those are important to have at some times. But sometimes we forget to come before God like and experience him like he's the Alpha and the Omega, the creator, the beginning and the end of everything. And so we're looking at how did Isaiah respond to such an experience?
So back to verse 5. Isaiah cried, "Woe to me! I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty."
And Isaiah here is humbled. He sees how his own sin gets in the way. Something key to be aware of here in the presence of God is Isaiah is aware of his own sin. It's not that God's pointing it out to him, but being in the presence of the Lord, Isaiah is looking inward because he can see himself so much more clearly in the context. So let me give you an example. I like to take pictures, okay? I think my pictures are pretty good. And a few years ago, before we left for Thailand, I went to Yosemite and we went on one of these, I went on one of these picture tours where you walk where Ansel Adams took pictures and you get to take pictures of the same spots that Ansel Adams took pictures of, and I was so excited and so happy I'm taking nice pictures. And I get back and I compare my pictures to Ansel Adams' pictures. And I gotta tell you guys, I am not a very good photographer. And see, I think the same thing, this is how it is with God and Isaiah, except it's not just photography, it's with everything. I mean, it's not that Isaiah's looking and saying, "Oh, I'm a bad photographer." Isaiah, this is God that created the light. God created the things we take pictures of. God created the possibility for us, the way that mirrors work, that the light bounces off and takes the picture and everything. God created all of that. And Isaiah goes, "Wow, this is so much different than what I thought." And maybe Isaiah is a holy man, but God is holy, holy, holy. And compared to God's holiness, it highlights Isaiah's unholiness.
Verse 6. "Then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it he touched my mouth and said, 'See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for.'"
So we know from the New Testament that God's forgiveness is also a sign of God's love. And this is huge. Even for Isaiah's faults, all of his sins, God still forgives him. God still loves him. God still wants Isaiah to be a part of what he's doing.
Verse 8. "Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, 'Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?' And Isaiah responded, 'Here am I, send me.'"
So how does Isaiah know he's forgiven, that he's loved? Because God gives Isaiah the opportunity to take action, and Isaiah enthusiastically agrees.
God said, "Go, tell this people, be ever hearing but never understanding, be ever seeing but never perceiving. Make the heart of this people calloused, make their ears dull, and close their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn and be healed."
And this part's hard because it's the exact opposite message from what we normally hear. We normally hear, "Oh, you can go save people. People can come to God. People can know God." And here God is telling Isaiah, "Look, go tell the people, these are my chosen people, but they're not going to be saved. I'm going to harden their hearts. They're not going to understand. No matter what they see, no matter what they hear, they're not going to get it." And I can just imagine Isaiah feeling, "These are my friends. This is my family. These are my people." But yet, after that experience that he had with God firsthand and knowing God's love and forgiveness, there's only one question he had for God, and that question reflected his acceptance of the situation.
Verse 11, the question is, "Then I said, 'For how long, Lord?' And God answered, 'Until the cities lie ruined and without inhabitant, until the houses are left deserted and the fields ruined and ravaged, until the Lord has sent everyone far away and the land is utterly forsaken. And though a tenth remains in the land, it will again be laid waste. But as the terebinth and oak leave stumps when they are cut down, so the holy seed will be the stump in the land.
And even though there's bad news, there's still hope. Someone will continue and eventually blossom into something bigger. There's going to be the seed left over that will grow into something else. So what happened to Isaiah in this passage, which makes it so good in my opinion, is that it exemplifies perfectly the blending and tension between knowing about God and experiencing God. Are we missing one? Oh, I'm missing. I forgot to put a slide in. Okay, sorry. Knowing about God and experiencing God. Two things that seem like they should not go together, but when they do, there's a beautiful tension between them. Neither one of them is compromised. They simply work together. Two things that seem like they're opposites, but they're in tension with each other. When we know about something, it's just head knowledge. And it's important, but when we experience something, it takes our head knowledge and puts it in tension with our heart experience. And that's important because if God is just knowledge from a book, and all we do is read and study, then we're just reading from a really old book about stories that happened thousands of years ago. On the other hand, when we experience God without knowledge of his nature or what he's done, then we probably won't recognize the Lord's actions as his, and we see them as coincidence or nature. It's a tension between knowing about and experiencing what which elevates our relationship and communication with the Lord. We begin to see what God is doing all around us. It's tensions like this that we're going to examine in Isaiah 6 in our own prayer life. So the first tension we want to talk about is hope and expectation. When it comes to relationship with God, whether it's prayer or ministry, we have to release our own expectations of what it's going to look like. We don't know exactly what Isaiah's expectations were, but based on his reaction when he went to the temple, it was not at all what he was expecting. Because hope requires faith in what God will do. That's the difference between hope and expectation. Expectation is what we want to see in the future, and hope is faith. Hope brings in faith in what God's going to do. By acknowledging he didn't have control of the situation, but that God did, he expressed hope. He chose to stay close to God and follow the opportunities.
So in the time that we spent preparing to leave for Thailand, it was a few years, if you calculated them, we really just tried to keep an open mind, right? Like everyone says, keep an open mind, keep those expectations low, right? Keep them low. Not that we're expecting God to be low, but just what our own expectations are, right? We're also told that within 5 years, most missionaries are doing something completely different than what they originally planned. So before we left, our original expectation, very low, was to just focus on discipleship. We were going to step into the House of Love youth program and disciple the individuals who are living there, growing up through the program, and then really just seek God. Okay, God, what else? What is it that you have for us? What opportunities are here that you want us to pursue? And so even with those very low expectations, God still changed our plans.
Yeah. And so within just a few months, we found out that there was already another organization that was doing discipleship with our college students. And they spoke much better Thai than us. They already had established a relationship. And we said, wow, okay, what are we going to do? And so we started talking to the staff. And we found out from the staff's perspective, they expected us to lead the organization. So it took me a while to really embrace that, honestly. Because we have a co-director there. And she's a Hill Tribe woman. She's local. And she's fantastic. And so I fought against taking over leadership for a long time. I fought against being that co-director. I said, oh, she's got it. She can do this. So I went out of my way. I didn't want to make decisions. I didn't want to make choices. I just want to sit back and say, okay, you guys do this. How can I help? You just let me know. And they kept saying, well, what do we do? What do we do? So I said, okay. And then one day I was talking to my co-director. And she was telling me how much she was struggling with leadership as well. And that she was clinging to the faith that she knew that God put her and I in that position to lead the organization together. And that's when I realized that my own expectations of not having expectations were actually getting in the way of me being a leader there. And so that's when I realized that I need to step forward and be a leader, that God was giving me an opportunity. And I need to take that opportunity and own that opportunity. I had to have faith that God would reveal the plan of what the future was going to look like of these two ministries. And to know that wherever God was leading, we had to stay close to what God was doing and just keep following the opportunities that he opened for us.
So pretty quickly, actually, upon releasing that expectation, we stepped into an opportunity that God provided. Some of those college students that we mentioned, we were able to have some conversations with them, and they actually came to us one day and said, "We don't really know what it's like to be in a family. Can we just hang out with your family?" And so I was like, yeah, right? Like, that's easy, actually. And so it was really awesome to just be kind of wide open to what God had before us. We started with dinner once a month and turned into twice a month. And sometimes we'd get a phone call like, "Hey, can I just come over and talk with you?" Like, so it's just becoming a very organic opportunity for relationship. And from that, we've had game nights, we've had activities that we've done together. We've had some really deep conversations just about God and relationship. And I'm just really excited to see kind of how that mentoring relationship leads, all because we step back and let God give us an opportunity.
It was kind of funny because they even said, "Oh, we want to see you guys fight and then get over it." And we're like, okay.
Yeah, we're definitely not perfect, so it's easy and hard, right, to like be vulnerable and just be like, this is us with our children trying to work through the day-to-day life, but it's been really cool.
And so the next slide is looking inward and looking outward. This is the next tension that we're talking about here. And we can do an entire sermon on Isaiah hearing the seraphim proclaiming that God is holy, holy, holy. For Isaiah, experiencing a holy God magnifies his unholy self. Being close to God means you're not just looking at the people you're working with and ministering to. It's about also looking inward. Seeing that you're no better or worse than them, no more or less worthy than the people you're ministering to. I am just as broken as the people we minister to. And maybe it just hits that my sins hit in different ways or at different times. They are just as worthy of God's love as I am.
Yeah, so we found that obviously looking inward and asking what are our motives are really important. It's easy to kind of just jump in blindly. You see a problem, you want to fix it. But it's actually, we've learned it's really important to actually step back and ask some questions, right? Why? Why do we want to help? Why do we want to be there? Why are we in ministry? And more importantly, maybe what are we ministering for or who are we ministering for? Those are some questions that have been really important for us to learn.
And I got to tell you, the first few years in Thailand in ministry, it was hard because I was so focused on what was going on with other people and what was going on in the organization. And I wasn't really paying attention to what God was doing in me. I was addressing problems by trying to do more to help people and stop taking care of myself. I was so stressed out and panicked at work that I bounced around from project to project and didn't even finish them all the way I needed to. And so, because of my health, God actually, I feel like through my health deteriorated, and God convinced me to slow down. I started riding my bike to the office every day just because there's no better way to slow down than to not drive, right? If I did drive, I'd force myself to stop at a coffee shop. There's a lot of coffee shops in Thailand. I would stop at a coffee shop, spend some time doing devotional, seek out what God's doing in my life. And after I started doing that and spending time with God, it became clear that it didn't just affect that one time in my life when I was trying to slow down. It started affecting my entire day and started touching all parts of my life. And so my prayer knife is not just looking inward or looking outward. It's a blending between the two. It's a tension between the two. And so I want to talk to you a little bit about the woman in the picture here with the glasses. She's one of the house moms at the House of Love. Her name is Malie. And her job is to watch the kids at the House of Love at the youth home. And we talked to her after some of the changes that have been going on at the House of Love that we'll talk about. And she said, before we started making these changes, she said, "I used to get really, really angry and frustrated with the kids very easily." And I totally understand because, you know, she's working in a youth home. There's about 25 kids there. When there's so many kids, her goal was just to get the kids to bed, to get them fed, to make sure they got to school on time, and not really have the time to spend the time with the kids. So in our first year, we brought in some other organizations to teach the staff about subjects like child protection and positive parenting. And we challenged the staff to really look inward about these subjects, not just to look at the kids only. And Malie here really took that to heart. And she really started looking inward a lot. And then we started to ask her, okay, now we want you to take an outward focus and talk to the kids about things like family. What does family mean to them? These are all orphaned or abused or at-risk kids. What does family mean to these kids? I was kind of curious myself. And ask them who they thought their parents were and what they see family is. And she told us, she came back and gave us a report, and she started crying. And she said, you know, some of these kids see me as their mom, and I had no idea that they saw me that way. And then she started learning, as we started talking about positive parenting and positive ways to raise the children, she started talking about one time when one of the boys started a little fire just to see what would happen. And she said her initial reaction was like angry and frustrated, and she was going to smack the stuff away from him. And then she said, no, she took a deep breath. She said nothing was going to catch on fire. She put it out, and she just said, okay, what's going on? Why? And she had a conversation with him about why he would start the fire. And it turns out he just wanted attention. And she was shocked, and she had no idea that he had such depth. And she started spending more time with him and building relationships with him individually and trying to understand him better.
Yeah, so looking inward towards yourself and looking outward towards others go together, right? And that's, in the middle of that tension is where those relationships thrive. And that's something that we've discovered within ourselves and with the relationships around us. Even in your relationship in prayer time with God, you need to look inward towards what God is doing in you, right? And balance that with what God is doing around you in the world. The last tension is alignment and planning. I love that when we look back at Isaiah 6, the passage we just read, that the prophet Isaiah had an experience with God, and he responded as soon as God expressed the need, right? Isaiah had no idea what this task was. God didn't tell him yet, right? He just said, I have something, and I need someone to go. And Isaiah had to say yes in that moment. He had no idea what it was going to be, but he had to say yes. And he had to be close to God to know how to align his plans with the future.
So early on in our arrival, we were evaluating the strategy of the ministry with the staff and decided to make some changes to better align with what God was doing in Thailand. Specifically, the ministry was a youth home with kids who were orphaned, abused, abandoned, or at risk. The kids would come to live at the youth home. But so we sent out surveys to some of the families of some of these kids and found that some of these parents, they still love their kids. They still cared about them. And we thought, what can we do to help the families, not just help the kids, but what can we do to recognize that these kids are part of a family and still continue to help the families as a whole? Many of the kids, they did have to be removed from their families. However, because their families weren't a safe place. But we wanted to see what we can do. And we started working towards a goal of reuniting the kids. In fact, we just were starting to have conversations and say, okay, is this something we can do? Is it a way to work with the parents and see if we can potentially, or extended family, and essentially get these kids living with family rather than living at our youth home? And like I said, we were just having the discussions about if it's even a possibility. And a few months in, the grandparents of one of our boys in our home came to us and said, hey, you know, we know you have our grandson. He's living here, and he has nothing but good things to say, but can we come live with us? And so we decided to see if we can do it. This is exactly what we were talking about. We see this as God opening a door. And so we sent the social worker out. She did assessments of the family. She saw they weren't taking drugs. They were poor. They were hurting. They were struggling. But we decided to try to do it. And we paid for the boy's education. We gave the family a little bit of food to help pay for the additional mouth to feed. We visited them weekly to provide relationship and coaching. We helped them decide some business strategies and things like that to supplement some of the things they were selling. And I could tell you that it wasn't perfect. It's still not perfect. But after a while, we could see that they're really making an effort to be a healthy family.
About a year later, We were working on a curriculum, actually, to start intentionally working with families with the hope of reuniting those who are in our care and possibly helping families in crisis before separation. So we were just starting some conversations to possibly get some of these families involved in our program with this curriculum when a couple other families from boys in our home approached us and said, hey, like, our situation has changed. We have steady jobs now. The boys are a little bit older. We'd kind of like to raise them. Like, would you help us? Would you help us in raising our kids? And we're like, well, let's see, right? So again, we went to their villages, did some assessments, and found that there was an opportunity that we could actually intentionally reunite them and work with their families. So it's important to know that until this point in time, working with families of children who had been removed from homes, right, and living in youth homes, it was almost unheard of for them to be intentionally reunited, right? It's like once they're in a youth home in Thailand, they're in a youth home, right, until they're an adult. And so it was just amazing to have this opportunity to say, okay, this has not been heard of in Thailand before, and yet now, within 2 years' time, we had three cases where it was not only possible, but that these families were actually thriving and becoming healthier. So we started to meet with some other homes in the area, and they started seeing this trend too. They were starting to see and experiencing some of these same things, and it was very clear to us and to our team that God was pushing us in this direction of actually working with families.
So the picture here of alignment planning, the boy in the shirt in the red, that's my buddy. His name is Som Chai. And he lived in the youth home when we got there. His mother was just 14 when he was born, and she didn't have any family support. Her mom was heavily into drugs, and she threw her out of the house. And this girl was just 14. She didn't know what to do. And so she took Som Chai to come live. She asked us to take care of Som Chai. And she didn't know what to do, and she just disappeared. Maybe not disappeared, but she just didn't know how to handle it. She was so young. So he lived with us, and he was also a very troubled kid. He was removed from several schools. And during our time at House of Love, we also started learning about trauma and learning about what trauma does to a person. And last year, we stayed in contact with his mom and kept saying, okay, how are you doing? What's going on? And last year, so he was one of the boys that we were talking about here, where his mom contacted and said, hey, you know, my situation's changed now. I just bought a house. I'm married now. And I have a new little daughter. And I want to know if Som Chai can come live with us and we can try to work together as a family and if you guys can help us. So once again, we sent our team out to pay them a visit and found that, yeah, she's right. I mean, her husband works when he can, and she works when he can, and it's not consistent. But we are going to pay for Som Chai's education, which is not a whole lot, but we pay for his education. We help with a little bit of food, and we're going to visit them every month to help them with relationship and our family strengthening curriculum. And once again, it's not easy for them. Suddenly being a parent of a 14-year-old boy who you don't know how to raise a 14-year-old boy, and all of a sudden suddenly becoming a parent of a 14-year-old boy isn't easy. Teenagers are challenging. But they're persisting, and they're working really hard to be a family. So where do we see God moving in the future? What's the plan for the future? Well, we're going to go back to Thailand in January. And that's awesome. And this, hold on, real quick, go back to that one real quick. I'm just going to talk about her real quick.
Okay.
This is one of the girls that graduated from our preschool. And she was the cutest, sweetest little thing. And our preschool's awesome because the goal of preschool is to help kids get into school and to keep them educated and keep them going in school. And she came out of our preschool and graduated, but then didn't go to elementary school. And we said, well, how come, you know, and we continue to keep in touch with our kids after they graduate from preschool. We said, how come you're not going to elementary school? Asked her parents. Well, we couldn't afford to buy our uniforms, so she's just not going to go to school. And we said, well, we'll buy you uniforms. Let's get her into school. So this picture was taken right after she got her, that's her brand new uniform there, and she's so happy and excited to go to school and be caught up with her friends right at the beginning of the school year. And a big part of what we're doing in Thailand, go ahead and go to the Team Thailand slide. You know, I don't want you guys to think that we are doing this on our own or that we are the ones making all the decisions or all the choices. We're part of a team. This is our team in Thailand, that there's 10 local Thai people that we are working with, and we all work together. And my role is to work with the co-director in seeking out what God's doing, and then developing a strategy and communicating with the staff so we can align to where God's moving. And then I'm working on also setting up systems and processes for the organization, and the team is the one that executes. So they go out into the villages, they find opportunities of families that need help, and they're working with those families, and we're praying about it and deciding how we can help.
Yeah, so next steps for House of Blessing. The COVID, actually, we mentioned COVID, right? That everybody knows about COVID, but in one capacity, there is a positive, and that was through our House of Blessing preschool. Yes, all the schools shut down in Thailand for over a year, so they couldn't go to school. But our teachers took it upon themselves to actually visit every single individual community where they had the preschool students there. They took them, they taught them the lesson for the week. They taught the parents how to help their children, which was a huge jump for them. But in that, of course, they got to have relationships, right? They got to build those relationships. They got to encourage them. They got to pray for them. And stemming from that, we actually got to have contact with two new communities. So now there's an opportunity to expand into newer communities. And we're hoping for this next year that we can actually open a fourth classroom. Right now we have three, so that we can access those two new communities that we mentioned and have a place for those kids to come. But from those open doors, right, those relationships are opportunities for us to look and see what are the needs of these communities. We don't want to assume what they need. We want to find out what they need and meet them where they're at. And so one of the big things that we're trying to build in our time here is a scholarship program that helps to go towards helping these families continue through education. So once they leave our preschool, can these families continue actually through elementary, through high school, and beyond, hopefully, is our goal. One of the biggest statistics, you mentioned the movie about child trafficking. One of the biggest statistics has shown that the most effective way to prevent child trafficking is to keep kids in school. And so our goal is to do that. Now, in Thailand, public school is free, but there's all these other costs that come with that. There's five uniforms they have to buy, and there's transportation, and there's meals, and there's all these extra things that really load down a family in need. Some of the low-income families that we work with in extreme poverty, 25% of their annual income goes towards one child in all those fees. So you can see how heavy that is if you have more than one kid, right? So our hope is that we can build up this scholarship program in helping to continue to get these kids an education and keep them through school.
And just one quick thing, that 25% that we say that's part of their thing, that's really only about $400 US, $400 or $600 US, and that's 25% of their annual income.
So that's the House of Blessing preschool. And again, we're hoping you can pray for us that we can hire a new teacher and be able to impact and have more kids coming in. For House of Love Youth Home is also changing, right? We've talked about those, that we're actually trying to work with some of the kids that we have in reuniting with families. And we've been able to work with two more families since the stuff that we shared in helping them to be reunited with their kids as well. So it's reduced the number of kids in our home, which has actually been a blessing too, because these kids that remain have been through a lot of trauma, and we can provide more personalized trauma-informed care for each of them individually. We're also currently supporting 8 college students. Our hope and goal is to see them through college if they want to go. And so right now we have 8 college students actively in college. They are currently now living out of the home, in dorm rooms or in apartments, and I'm working with them with another team member to meet with them individually and coach them. And we've taken some of that family strengthening program curriculum that we mentioned and adapted it to help teach them some important life skills that they might not have necessarily learned growing up in a group home. So there's a lot of mentorship opportunities there with that.
The coaching parents, if we can go back to the coaching parents slide real quick. Arising from the youth home is a family strengthening project, which is where we really see God leading. When we receive a referral that a family's in crisis or on the verge of separation, we're working with them to not be in such dire situation that they feel like that they get to the point. What we're trying to do is kids have to be separated from the family sometimes, but we're hoping to start backtracking that and start working with the families earlier on before they get to the point where the kids have to be separated. In the past, when there's a family in crisis, most homes in Thailand would offer to take that child out of the crisis and give them an education. So we see God looking at the family as a whole and realigning the House of Love ministry to reflect that. We have a curriculum which we're using that's in Thai, and it helps families learn about budgeting, positive parenting, healthy communications, relationships, social problems, and even starting a small business. So now when we encounter families who are on the verge of separation, we have more tools available to help the family out as a whole. There are still cases where we may find that separation is necessary, and we'll bring the child in the youth home if their home is no longer a safe place for them, but we want to continue working with the family and with the curriculum and working towards reunifying them in the future if that's possible. Out in the mission field, honestly, guys, God has challenged us in so many ways we didn't expect. There are times where, honestly, I wasn't sure we can do it. I wasn't sure if I could do it, for sure. I definitely wanted to give up. I was full of stress and anxiety for a while. And I had a lot of sleepless nights because this was so far outside my comfort zone, especially thinking we were just going to do discipleship. It was so far out of my comfort zone and what I was knowledgeable at and understanding the situation. But I had one thing to hang on to, and that was my prayer life. I constantly looked back on my call and knew that God had called us specifically to the House of Love, the House of Blessing, and Chiang Mai, Thailand. And I knew that if God was specifically calling me to this place, then he knew I could handle it. God has filled our lives with just so many opportunities, and we have to make a choice. We have to make a choice for each of those opportunities. Do we want to deny ourselves, take up a cross, and follow God's lead? And that goes for all of us. So Isaiah 6:8, the slide says, or the verse says, "Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, 'Whom shall I send? Who will go for us?' And I said, 'Here I am, send me.'" And this verse is like every missionary uses this verse so often, and I guarantee you that every time I said to a pastor, "Oh, we're going to do Isaiah 6," and they probably just roll their eyes and say, "Another missionary doing Isaiah 6, great." And it's popular because of the call, but I got to tell you guys, this is a specific opportunity, which is before Isaiah. It's not just for missionaries. Isaiah had a choice. God's allowing him to express his free will. He has a choice to make here. If God forces Isaiah to spread the message, it'd be easy for Isaiah to be half-hearted, to go tell a few people that he was told to say, do what he was asked, and then be done. Instead, because of his entire experience of experiencing God, of meeting what God was doing, of facing his own humility, of being forgiven and loved, of being given a choice, he's respected. And then he's trusted to have a part in God's plan. Isaiah is all in. Not just to follow a command, but to take an opportunity to be close to God's heart. And this is a challenge for all of us. There's an opportunity for all of us each day. Each day we can choose whether or not to get out of bed. We choose whether or not to love our spouse. We choose to go to church. We choose to accept the opportunities before us and make the most of them or not. God is presenting each of us with opportunities to experience what he's doing in the world and embrace our role in that. I pray that we all get up each day with a desire to experience God and take the opportunities that he invites us to.
In closing, we want to say thank you. You guys are our mission partners, and we really feel your love and your prayers on the other side of the world. There's been some tough times that we know prayers here have carried us through our experiences over there. A few specific prayer needs, if you would be in prayer specifically for God to keep guiding the team that's in Thailand right now. It's really hard to step away from that and be here with so much stuff going on over there, but we know it's God's ministry. So that the staff, while we're apart especially, would really be encouraged, would really seek God and his guidance, and that they would be, just courageous in stepping forward in those opportunities that they have going on right now. One big thing that we're looking for here while we're in America is a team of volunteers, stateside, that will stay here. I mean, if you want to go to Thailand, that's fine, but we're looking for people from here who have the gifting of wanting to be involved with communications, website, fundraising, and also grants, research, and writing. So, woohoo, if you love those things. That's a big need of ours in order to keep operational costs going in Thailand, is to build a team here that would help assist us while we're over there. So if you know somebody or if God's leading you, let us know. But we already know God has those people picked out, so keep praying that for us. And then personally for our family, this is a lot of moving around while we're in America. It's hard to step away again from our home that's now in Thailand. But that we would just embrace this time together, that we get to have a time to step away from some of the crazy of the day-to-day in Chiang Mai and embrace what's going on here and reconnect with people and partners here. So those are some specific needs that we have. If you want to talk to us, ask more questions, or get in touch with us, outside we have a table. I think it's in the bulletin too, but we have our email address, we have our website. If you want to receive our newsletter, you can sign up out there. And if you just want to talk to us, that's great too. So we'd love to chat with you. So thank you so much. We are really blessed to be here with you today.